X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
The Gathering. The supernatural world can be a dark, intimidating, and scary place. We gather to shine light on the mysterious and misunderstood aspects of the paranormal world. We bring to the table years of experience as mediums, healing channels, and paranormal investigators.
We share true stories from our experiences to dispel fear where we can and help you discover the amazing layers that make up the paranormal world. You are invited to gather around the metaphysical table with us and discuss the worlds of the unseen on The Gathering Radio Show.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to The Gathering Radio Show here on the Para X Network. And this is Heidi, and I would say, and this is Stephanie, but she's not here tonight. So we are going to continue on without Stephanie, and I'm so sad for her. The reason she's not here tonight, she had to let go of one of her little fur babies tonight. And how awful that is. But she just had to let go of one of her pups a couple months ago. And so how awful. She's having a hard time, so we are going to continue on, and I know she'll be thrilled to listen to the replay of the show because this is one of her favorite topics to talk about, and we'll get to that here in just a minute. But I hope you're all doing well here with everything that's going on right now and with the whole, you know, stay at home and lockdown, and, you know, we're really adjusting to a lot of changes here in our state here in Minnesota and in our country as well. So I hope everybody's staying safe and finding maybe new ways to do things, new ways to get things done or to spend your time. I know tonight it's a fitting topic because we're going outside tonight, and I think a lot of people have been doing more of that. So I think that's been a benefit for a lot of people, that they're getting out into nature more. And I know that that's very healing for me and for a lot of people. So hopefully you're able to do that. I know I've been talking with a couple of folks in some of my classes, and they're in northern Minnesota and it's still snowing. So maybe not quite enjoying spring yet like some of us, but you know, hopefully still getting out because there's plenty to do even when it's snowing outside. And I know as we're slowly getting back into things opening up, just be safe. I know I actually have a trip coming up starting on Sunday. And I didn't think it was going to happen. I thought it was going to be caught up in all of the shutdowns that we're all being, you know, kind of, I guess, caught up in. And I talked to, it's two overnight investigations, two locations that we're going to, one in Indiana, which is Whispers Estates. And then the second one is in Kentucky, which is Waverly Hills. And I thought they would be both closed still, but they informed me that they are still open as long as we have less than 10 people for their overnight investigations. And we do. So we are still on. So we are taking super precautions for all of everything that we're going to be doing, packing more food so we don't have to, you know, go through drive-thrus as often or go into gas stations, you know, as often, packing lots of hand sanitizer and disinfecting wipes so that we can use those. I have a box of latex gloves that we're all going to be using. So we have tons of gloves. I'm making masks for everybody. So we have some masks. And I don't know, we're going to do as much as we can to stay safe, but still continue because, again, you know, paranormal investigating is near and dear to my heart. And I'm able to bring a few people on this trip that haven't been to those locations. So I'm very excited for that. So hopefully I'll have some fun information for you guys when we come back. Actually, next week, I will be gone on the trip and Stephanie is taking the week off. So we will clue you in to any happenings, probably the week after or whenever we have our next, you know, just talking about everything that we've been going on, what's been going on. So we'll give you all of that in the next show that we have open and hopefully I have some good stuff to share. And then I'm looking in the chat room, and Heidi, you can still squatch. Yes, I can, Sherry. You are correct. I can still go out in the woods and look for Sasquatch. And absolutely, that is something that we've been doing. If you've been following the Squatchers page, there's been some updates on just investigations. So it's definitely, you can still get outside, everybody. It doesn't matter the season. Doesn't matter the weather. You can still go outside. And so that kind of leads me into what we're going to be talking about tonight is getting outside and exploring nature and talking about animals. And one of the things that we wanted to do this year is have a either a sanctuary or a group that works with animals or a rescue on every month so we can talk about animals and animal awareness because of how important they are on our planet and how that fits in with our show. When we're talking about spirit animals and how many of us have animals that are near and dear to our heart, whether they're in person or just through, you know, feelings or ideas, you know, we have these animals that are near and dear to our hearts, and they really do bring certain energies and characteristics to us that can help us in our lives. You know, and you think of all of the folks that have animals in their homes, you know, those animals are spirit animals to each one of us, and they bring certain in, you know, energies and again, love and guidance and wisdom to us. And they're super important to us. So we want to bring awareness to people on how important it is to take care of our animals, take care of the planet so that they can be with us for a very, very long time. And again, some animals, they can be in your home, and some animals like eagles cannot be in your home, and you do not probably want them in your home, but they are amazing and beautiful. And that's what we're going to be doing tonight is talking about eagles. And we have Lori Naumann with the Minnesota DNR. She's actually a spokesperson for the Non-Game Wildlife Program. And she is with us tonight to talk about eagles. Welcome, Lori.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, we're excited to talk about eagles tonight. And we have a chat room, too. So if anybody has questions for you through our chat room, I'll definitely let you know, okay?
Awesome. That sounds great.
Great. So I'd love for you to start with just sharing how you got involved with this program and working with the eagles.
Well, I've been working for Minnesota DNR for, 30 years now. And one of the things that I do for the Non-Game Wildlife Program is marketing and promotion for our program because we're funded on donations. And so I need to let folks know about the wonderful work that we do. And so an idea that we had an eagle's nest that was very close to one of our offices, and there was a power pole nearby, and folks said, wouldn't it be cool if we could put a camera up in this eagle's nest? And so we did that. And because I am a spokesperson for Non-Game, I answered lots and lots of questions about birds in general and all of the other non-game species. And what non-game means is all of those things in nature that cannot be hunted or fished, which is really a majority of the creatures in the wild. They're mostly protected. And so we put this eagle cam up, and it just exploded. People love their eagles.
It's amazing. You know, I'm looking at the eagle cam, and I actually put the link for it in our chat room. It is fascinating. Like, really, like, I could watch this. Maybe I'd rather watch this over just TV because this is way more interesting.
It really is. And for folks that have been watching it since the beginning, even just the beginning of this season, it has been fascinating. It has been a learning tool, and it's been a little heartbreaking. We did lose one chick. That's pretty typical in the wild where one chick may die. It's sort of, I don't like to use the term survival of the fittest, but that's sort of what happened. There just wasn't enough food coming in to the nest by the parents, and so one of the chicks we lost. But the two that are there now, you wouldn't believe how fast they grow. They were these tiny, fuzzy little chicks, and you can go back on some of our Facebook posts as well as our posts online and see how cute and fuzzy they were. Just a few months ago, they hatched the second week in March, and they're now Well, the oldest chick appears to be larger than both of the parents right now.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of a common. It appears a lot larger because it still has a lot of downy feathers underneath, and also because eagles at this age are just now starting to exercise their wings in order to take flight and learn how to fledge. Fledge means leave the nest. Mm-hmm. So their feathers that they have right now are actually longer and stronger than they will be when they molt and have their adult feathers come in.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I was looking at some of these videos that you guys have up, like the laying of that first egg and, you know, how they hatch, the egg hatching. And so I was looking at some of those videos, and it's so amazing. And you're right. These little baby eagles are adorable. They are so cute. They're little just puffballs. And now when you look at them in comparison, they're kind of like awkward teenagers because they don't look like their parents. And they're certainly not that little ball of fluff anymore, but they're still really, I don't think I would know that they were an eagle if I saw them just, you know, out. I wouldn't know what they were actually. Now that I've seen this, I would know, but they don't, I guess, look like eagles when they're born.
They don't. And actually they are going to look this way until they're about 5 years old. So bald eagles do not get their full white head and white tail until they're 5 years old, and that's when they are sexually mature. That's when they can start to mate and breed and have their own eaglets. But until that time, they'll start getting some white, and they become really mottled, and they have lots of different spots on them, but they're mostly brown, like they are now.
Mm-hmm.
And they are very much like awkward teenagers right now, because they don't have any idea the power that they have in their wings and in their feet. And so they don't really know what to do with these giant feet that they have and these giant wings that they have. And so you're right. They do look very awkward right now.
And those feet, man, you can see them. Those feet look huge for those bodies. I mean, they look almost the same size as the adult feet. And it's so cool to look at these.
They are. And that's one of the ways that we identify their gender, is by the size of their feet and the size of their beaks. So if you look at the two chicks standing side by side, you can tell that one has much larger feet and one is just larger in general and has a larger beak, and that's the female. It's because of all raptors, the females are one third larger than the males.
Okay.
And so she has these giant feet, and those feet have the strength of 600 pounds per square inch. They are incredibly strong. They need to be able to fly, and when they're hunting, they take fish and they take other prey. And when they grab a slimy fish out of the water, they need to have the power in their grip to be able to lift that and carry it away. And even though they look super huge when you're seeing an adult bald eagle, they weigh between 8 and 10 pounds. You would think it was a lot more than that, but they weigh between 8 and 10 pounds, and they can't lift anything much more than their own body weight.
Wow. It's impressive to watch this video. And right now, I don't know if anybody tuned into the video while we were chatting, because I put that link out there. You could see the adult eagle feeding the two young ones. And that's like, who gets to see that, you know?
That's the amazing part about it. You can watch them as if you're right, you know, you're right there. And that's the really cool part about all this. And it's a learning tool. And a lot of teachers use it in their classrooms and have it up all year round. We even had a classroom email us and send us photos of their fourth graders in Vietnam watching this. They make up lesson plans, and they, they learn all about eagles and how their eggs are laid and how they nest and how they build their nests and how they are strengthening their wings. So they're doing lots of hopping around right now with their wings and stretching them and flapping them around. And they will start what is called branching soon, which means they're going to venture out onto those branches that are near the nest. And that will give them the feeling of sort of air under their body, so they get the feel of what it's going to feel like to fly.
Wow. Oh, yeah, there's one that was just expanding its wings, and oh, my gosh, it's beautiful. That's beautiful. And
it is.
Do they watch their parents? Is that how they start getting the idea to do this?
Yes, absolutely. They, as they're growing, you can watch them imitate their parents with a lot of things, like moving the sticks around in the nest, and they are self-feeding right now, so that means that they're able to feed themselves. If a carcass is brought into the nest, they're not great at it. They don't have the ability that the parents do to rip apart whatever it is that they have brought into the nest. But they imitate just about everything, including, you know, watching the skies. They have incredible eyesight, and you can see them doing that, watching, you know, their parents. And at this stage, you don't see the adults on the nest too much because they are intentionally staying further away so that the young ones will watch them fly, watch them hunt, and watch them soar. And also they will start bringing less and less food into the nest so that that entices the young ones to leave the nest and go find food. The parents will continue to feed them after they've left the nest. So that first flight out of the nest when they fledge is going to be a very awkward and clumsy flight, and they will likely land on the ground. It's, you know, kind of like, whoa, what is this? And they land on the ground, and then the parents will continue to feed them, but they encourage them by taking the food up above the nest and sort of almost teasing them with it. But it's like, hey, you need to follow us. You need to, you know, come over this way. This is where the food is. Or if you want food, you're going to have to fly to me. So that part's going to be fun, although I can't follow the nest too much with, you know, the bird's too much from the nest. I operate the camera. And so if anyone is watching it right now, I can zoom in and I can back out. The timing is about, I don't know if it's 30 seconds or a minute out from what I do with the camera, but I'm operating it. So I can zoom around and I can search the trees for the adults and for the chicks, but I don't have great ability with it, so we won't be able to see them too much. They will come back to the nest a couple of times after they fledge, but for the most part, once they leave, they're gone and they're learning how to be an eagle.
Wow. So how do the parents go too far away then? You said that the babies are always kind of watching the parents, so the parents must not be that far when they're out hunting.
Right, they're not. There's a pond right underneath the nest that they use, and then there are also roads. I joke that there's planes, trains, and automobiles because there's an airport close by, there's a rail yard close by, and then there's a highway. And they do bring in a lot of roadkill. Eagles are sort of scavengers, and so they depend on that roadkill a lot. They also take things like rabbits and squirrels and fish from the river, too. It's not too far from the river. But yes, they're close to the nest. It doesn't look like they are, but they're watching and protecting the young ones from predators and, you know, just keeping an eye out on them.
So what kind of predators are an issue for these babies?
Well, I'd say the biggest one at this point is probably raccoons.
Oh.
So while they're still in the nest, it's and great horned owls. Great horned owls can, although at this size, the eaglets, it would be pretty hard for a great horned owl to take one, but it could, because the eaglets are not necessarily very good at defending themselves yet, and they wouldn't really know what to do. Their size and their strength would allow them to protect themselves, but they wouldn't know. And so the adults will protect them from that. And there were raccoons in the nest early in the season when the adults were incubating the eggs. Both parents partake in incubation and caring for the young. And you could see the camera has infrared, and so you can see at night what's going on in the nest. And there were a couple of visits from the raccoons, but they got whacked a few times from mom, and they didn't come back.
They learned their lesson.
Yes. Exactly.
I can't imagine tangling with an eagle. I don't care who you are. Great horned owl or raccoon, you're probably going to lose, I would imagine.
Yes, especially with the adults. They're very, very strong. And in a normal year, if we didn't have a pandemic going on right now, we would have put bands on the chicks. About a week ago, we would have taken them from the nest and put identification bands on them. And because of all of this, we couldn't really social distance, and so it wasn't possible for us to do that. But I hold them then, and they are so powerful, and you need to be very, very careful because they can, you know, peck you in the eye, and they have a lot of strength in their feet. So you have to make sure that you're holding their feet away from each other and away from your hands so that you don't get your hands gripped by those powerful talons.
And that's even the babies you're talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah. Oh. And they're huge. And we've got, there are some photos of past bandings. We haven't had chicks in this nest since 2017. Oh. Okay. Last year, this pair moved in and kicked out the original pair. So that's a common thing to happen, that when birds find a territory, they will fight other eagles for the territory. So if you hear those stories about eagles getting their feet tangled together and then tumbling to the ground, mm-hmm. that's adults fighting for territory.
Okay.
And it's not mating. They don't do their mating in the sky. That's a myth. They mate in trees or on the ground. We got that on video a couple of times as well. But it's just a common thing that when birds find a territory they like, they'll fight for it. And I think the original mom on that nest, female, was getting older, and she just wasn't up for fighting it anymore, and she left, and these two took over. And the year before that, they didn't have any eggs or chicks or anything last year. Mm. The year before that, the eggs froze. We think that there was an inexperienced male, and it was just a really cold, wet spring, and the eggs just did not make it. They incubated and incubated for like 45 or 50 days, and finally the female, you know, finally they gave up and knew that they weren't going to hatch. So that was sad.
So what happens then with the eggs?
Well, so they broke. One of them broke, and then once that happened, the parents came to the nest less and less. And then the third egg was there, and they hadn't been incubating at all anymore. And interestingly enough, a juvenile bald eagle came into the nest and was walking around in the nest and just sort of checking things out. Might have been a juvenile from one of the, might have been a one of the chicks from the nest from previous years. And it walked around and walked around, and then it came up and it kind of looked down at the egg, and it grabbed it with its foot and just crushed it.
Oh my gosh.
It was a little comforting for me. At least I knew that there was just liquid that came out of there. So it wasn't like they had really reached development at all. Okay. So they froze when they still were very much just liquid. So, it was a little, you know, easier to know that there weren't, you know, chicks that froze to death. So,
yeah. Well,
and then the
sad.
Juvenile ate that. You know, that's important protein, and it ate the yolk and all of that, and ate the rest of the egg as well.
Mm. So kind of cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. That happens.
I guess that's nature taking care of itself.
It is. And a disturbing thing that happened the last year, we did have eaglets on the nest, was one of the chicks was struggling, and it appeared as if maybe it had a broken wing or something. And people were raising their voices and letting us know that we needed to go and rescue this chick, which we had absolutely decided we were not going to intervene just because we had a camera in the nest. This is nature. We're not going to get involved. Well, it reached the governor's office. And so we went up to the nest and grabbed the chick. And we have a world-class raptor rehabilitation center here in Minnesota called the Raptor Center. of the University of Minnesota. They are, nationally recognized for rehabilitating raptors, and we took the chick there, and it was just not going to make it, so they euthanized it. And then the following year, the same thing happened where a chick was starting to struggle, and I thought, oh boy, we're going to have this uprising again, and we're going to have to do something about it. And at one point, then they were still pretty small, and at one point, the female just kind of turned her back to the camera, and she was feeding the chicks, and she moved away, and there were only two.
She
fed it to the other two. Mm-hmm.
So she kind of decided,
she knew it was not going to make it, that it was going to be, a wasted resource for them, and too much. It takes an awful lot of resource for those adult eagles to hunt and to defeather or defin whatever it is that they're feeding the chicks, and they just knew that it was going to be a lot of time and energy for a chick that wasn't going to make it. So that was very important protein and nutrients for the other two chicks.
Wow.
It was disturbing, but that's nature.
Yeah, well, for sure. And I mean you think of this eagle that made that decision, and it's smart. You know, everything you said is really smart. I mean, it's to us as humans, that just doesn't make sense with us, of course. Mm-hmm. But as animals, it's like, well, that's really smart, as you explained it. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So it's so interesting that this animal can just say, I know this is what's going to happen, and this is what I'm going to do to make it best for all of us. And
exactly.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Huh.
Yeah, animals are a lot smarter than we are in a lot of ways.
For sure. We talk about animals quite a bit on the show, and that is a common theme. So agreed,
right. Mm-hmm.
Here. So I have one question before we go to break, because you mentioned the eagles coming in and taking over a nest that they find and kind of booting out if someone else is there. Do eagles stay together once they find a mate, or do they end up separating and finding another mate someday, or how does that work?
Well, they quote mate for life, but what that means is until something happens to one of the other ones. So the female on the nest we knew was the same one since 2012 when we put the camera up, because she had a band on her leg. So she had actually been to the Raptor Center as an injured eagle. And so we could read the band numbers with the camera. And so she was easy to identify. And the mate that she had for the first several years had disappeared. So we don't know what happened to him. He may have, gotten hit by a car or something, but it was likely that he somehow died and he disappeared. So another one moved in and she accepted him because their allegiance is really more to the territory than it is to each other, although they will stay together as long as both of them are still alive and healthy. So when she left, they had been mating on the nest and they had been doing their whole thing. And so I'm guessing that she was ready to lay her eggs and decided, I'm just doing this elsewhere. And someone nearby, near the railroad, said that they saw a female with a band come in and lay her eggs in another nest very close by. So we're guessing that was her.
Wow. It's fascinating. And I was watching one of those videos with when they lay their eggs, and it's so cool. And I saw how you guys could zoom in, see it, because it's kind of hard to tell with the white feathers and the white egg. And it's like, where is the egg? It's like, oh, they are zooming in there. That must be the egg. And the other thing I thought was the egg was the feathers or something. So, that was neat to see that. So they stay together as long as everybody's still around and healthy. They stick together. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and they can live to be in their 30s. And so from five until whenever, they will continue to breed and reproduce, which is another reason why if they lose a chick every year, it's not so detrimental to the population as a whole. Because you think about, if they're raising, we've already fledged 10 chicks from this nest, and after these two fledge, it'll be 12. So and just one nest has produced 12 more eagles.
Wow.
To be out in the wild.
How often, do they, and this, well, one quick question here, and then we'll go to commercial break, is how many times do they lay eggs in a year? Just the one time?
just once. Yep.
Okay. So this is it. When these chicks.
Yep.
Okay. And then it's.
And they'll start bringing in sticks and all that kind of stuff in about November, and that's when they start their whole nesting process again, but they won't lay eggs again until probably February or March.
Okay. But it's still really cold then, so they've got to be on top of it. Literally.
Right.
On top of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Got it. Awesome. Well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. So we'll continue, because as I was watching the Eagle Cam and talking with you, questions filled up in the chat room and I totally wasn't paying attention because I was just engrossed in the Eagle Cam. So we've got some questions when we come back from commercial break, and we'll take 2 minutes. So everybody stay tuned. We are the Gathering Radio Show here on the Para X Network.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para X.
You've no doubt heard of Tango and Cash. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Perhaps it takes two to tango. Well, now, on the first and third Thursdays of each month, there's a show called Tango and Friends at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network with your host, Bruce Tango. And yes, there will be at least two to tango on each episode, sometimes even more. There's going to be lots of topics and lots of guests you'll all know and lots of surprises. Tango and Friends, every first and third Thursday of the month at 8 p.m. right here on the Para X Radio Network.
Hey, Stephanie.
Hey, Tommy, what's shaking?
Oh, just getting ready for this week's show. It's going to be another far-out adventure on He Said, She Said, the Cryptid Show. What happens when you get two cryptid researchers together, one from Minnesota and one from Cryptovania?
I know. It's so much fun, and it's every week, and we get to have fun and talk to different people. And
we don't always agree on everything.
We might even disagree about a thing or two. Oh, my.
One never knows. It's been known to happen before.
And that is the beauty of He Said, She Said, the Cryptid Show on Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Para X Radio Network.
That was money in the bank.
Welcome back to The Gathering here on the Para X Network. And we are talking with Lori Nauman of the Minnesota DNR, and we're talking about eagles, and specifically the eagles in the Eagle Cam that are in the link that I posted here in the chat room, and we'll post it also in the Facebook page so you guys can check it out, because I have been enthralled with this Eagle Cam since we started talking, and I forgot to look for questions, and so now we have questions for Lori. So welcome back, Lori. We're excited to have you here, and we've got some questions for you here.
Great.
So the first question is from Sherry, and she said that she's aware of this happening with smaller birds, but do any types of birds plant their eggs into eagles' nests?
Well, no, not really. I wouldn't put it past a cowbird to try to do that. Cowbirds are notorious for parasitizing other nests, and that means they lay their eggs in other nests, and I would think that a cowbird would know that their egg wouldn't be safe in an eagle's nest, but you never know. That's what they do. That's how they procreate, and that's how they promote their own species. And but I can't think of any specific instances of that happening.
Okay, I can't imagine thinking that that would be a good idea. I mean, I don't care what kind of bird you are, you just. I don't think that would, they must know better than that, I would think.
Most animals do know better than to even go near an eagle's nest for any reason.
Well, because you also might be lunch then, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
So you're in big trouble either way. You get your egg in there, the egg is lunch, or you are lunch. So yeah, I can't imagine. So Kat is saying that she thought she maybe heard of a hawk that was raised by an eagle, a baby hawk. Have you heard of that?
I have. And that certainly will happen from time to time where the, for some reason there was an egg there and that, the eagle didn't know any better. And so that certainly could have been the case, and that could have happened, where something happened to the mother hawk, or the eagles killed it or whatever, and they had already laid an egg, and then the eagles laid their eggs and they end up taking care of it. So, you know, again, that is certainly a possibility. And I guess now that Kat mentions that, I do remember seeing video of that. And I also remember seeing video of a hawk who came flying into an eagle's nest that had a camera on it so you could see it. And it came flying in to try to take one of the chicks, or, you know, kill one of the chicks. And the parent came in and immediately killed that hawk and fed it to the chicks.
Oh, whoops.
So, yeah. Yeah. So exactly what you're saying, that's exactly what happens.
Not smart hawk. Okay. Yeah.
Nope.
I just can't even imagine, because fortunately, I see them a lot now, and I live out in the country, and so we are right by a river, and we see eagles across the street, and then they fly over into our yard, and every once in a while, I can see one closer than maybe I feel comfortable with, and they're huge.
Mm-hmm.
They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't understand a bird that is that size or smaller that would think of tangling with one. I, as a human,
right,
I am bigger than it, but I certainly wouldn't tangle with it ever, so... Oh, I can't imagine these animals,
right,
that think it's a good idea. So anyway,
exactly.
One question here is from Kushtaka. What is the top speed an eagle can fly?
It's about 100 miles an hour.
What?
So that would be top speed. And they typically will fly, you know, about 50 miles an hour or something like that. But yeah. Close to 100 miles an hour. So when people ask me how far away they will fly for food, things like that, 10 miles wouldn't be unusual, because they wouldn't necessarily go that far away from their chicks for any length of time. But if they had to, they could, and they would be there in 6 minutes.
Oh, so, my gosh.
You know, pretty amazing.
I didn't think you were going to say that. That is, I mean, I don't drive that fast in my car. Ever. So
right.
That's nuts.
Yeah,
oh my
it
goodness.
Is.
Okay, that's
very
super
powerful
cool,
wings.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm just curious, what's the average size of an eagle, and then an eagle that's especially large, like what size would that be if you have a any kind of measurement system, I guess?
Well, so the way that we measured them, we would have weighed the chicks when we put bands on them, and we would have, and we do, unfortunately, get in a lot of dead bald eagles. And between 8 and 10 pounds is about average. Females can be like 10 to 12 pounds. Okay. We did have a 14-pound eagle brought in that had died. Oh. And it was a female. She was especially large. But eagles tend to be a little larger in areas where they have a really abundant food source. So eagles in Alaska are larger than our eagles here, and that's just because genetically they've had a very abundant food source with salmon, and they have a higher eagle population in general, and they're just bigger and stronger.
Wow. And how many, because we're looking at bald eagles here in the eagle cam, but how many different types of species of eagles are there?
Well, there are a lot worldwide. I want to say I can't even take a guess, but there are a lot. In the United States, there are, I believe, 3 different species. So we've got golden eagles, which do come to Minnesota in the wintertime, just in the very southern tip, but they're very common in the western part of the United States, and they are slightly larger than bald eagles. And then there's a Steller sea eagle, which I can't tell you exactly where their range is and where their habitat is, but I believe that we have them in the United States. I'm mostly a Minnesota specialist, so...
Okay. No, that's okay. I'm just curious.
Other species I don't know that much about, but there are a ton of eagle species. If you get a chance to... go online and look up eagle species in the world. It's amazing. And the size of some of these creatures is amazing, and their colors and their it's pretty wild.
I saw that this, you called it a stellar, what was it? The stellar sea eagle. That's it. I saw a video just, I don't know if it was today or yesterday, with that eagle, and someone was holding it on their arm, and it was huge. Mm-mm. It looked like it was 3-4 feet tall. I thought, that's not real. And it was. It was a living bird. Oh, my goodness. It was huge.
Yeah, they're amazing. Very intimidating to be holding one of those on your arm.
No, I couldn't imagine.
I can't imagine.
That looks, I'm like, go you. You keep that job. I would never do it.
Right.
Because, no.
Exactly.
I mean, the bird looked like he could lean over and eat the guy's head in one, like, chomp.
Right.
So, no.
Right, yeah.
Not even. Yeah, that's very interesting. So with the eagle population in Minnesota, because it seems like you can see them so often now, which is, it feels like a gift, because I remember growing up, we never saw them. I mean, when it was literally a miracle, because there just weren't any around. How long has, I mean, Minnesota's really been focused on, you know, bringing eagles back, and, you know, can you tell us just a little bit of the history about, you know, how that came around, and you know, how big the population was before we lost them, and where we're at now?
Mm-hmm. So in the 1940s and 50s, there was a chemical called DDT that was used on farm crops. And Rachel Carson was a famous biologist who discovered that it was killing off our raptor species and a lot of other species of birds and causing them to become almost extinct. So eventually that chemical was banned in the 1960s, but we had all but lost eagles in Minnesota. So they had been abundant, and then this chemical caused the thinning of their eggshells. And so many species, peregrine falcons, eagles, trumpeter swans, all kinds of things, had these eggs that were so thin that when they tried to incubate them, they would crush right under them, under the weight of their bodies. So our program was very instrumental in actually recovering the species. So we started to get eagles from the wild and raise them in captivity, and then also provide some eagle chicks to other states as well to help them with their populations. But we were very focused on protecting their habitat and making sure that DDT was continuing to be banned, and putting as much effort toward protecting them and providing habitat as we could. And today, the population in Minnesota is the highest of the lower 48 states. We have the highest population, and we don't know exactly that number now, and that's a good thing, because we haven't had to do surveys since about 2005.
Oh, wow.
That was when it was delisted, meaning that it was not on the endangered species list anymore, and it was considered recovered. So we don't do surveys anymore after 2005 because they're completely recovered. And I would guess that our population is somewhere around 4,000 breeding pairs.
Wow.
In the state.
And we have, you said, the highest in all of the lower 48.
Correct.
That's fantastic. Go Minnesota.
Yeah, the only other state that probably has a comparable population is Florida. They also have a very high population, and of course that's an abundant food source there too, is, you know, the ocean. But there's lots of, you know, in the Everglades, there's lots of prey there for them as well. But, yep.
That's fantastic. Yay. You know, it makes you proud to be a Minnesotan when you hear something like that. That's pretty cool.
Yep, absolutely. And I'm, you know, really proud to work for my program too, because we have been really instrumental with a lot of different species, peregrine falcons and trumpeter swans and all kinds of species that were really struggling and not doing well. We brought back the trumpeter swan population by going to Alaska and getting permits to take some eggs out of some trumpeter swan nests in Alaska because they were abundant there. Brought them back here, incubated them, and released them into the wild. And in 1988 and 89, our goal was to have 350 breeding pairs of trumpeters in Minnesota. Today, there are 30,000.
Oh my gosh. I wouldn't have guessed that many.
30,000 individuals.
That's so cool. That's crazy. And you know, it's interesting because this spring, it was in February, and I was, I don't know, I was getting out of my car and I saw maybe 20 of them fly over my head, and they were making all sorts of ruckus. And it was like, I almost started crying because it was so beautiful. And I had never seen anything like that. I've seen every once in a while, see two or two, but that was amazing. And that is so 30,000. That's so amazing.
And talk about a huge bird, right? Those things are ginormous.
I think they were either landing or taking off, and it was crazy how big they were and loud. It was extremely, it was very loud. So,
right. And it's just so cool that we, you know, the donations to the tax forms paid for that, for all of that to be, you know, all of the work that was put into that and all of the work that was put into bringing back the bald eagle and the peregrine falcons and all of those species that were struggling was all paid for by donations. And that makes me really proud to be a Minnesotan as well, because there are so many people here who are so proud and love the environment so much that they feel it needs, you know, support. So
that's awesome. So I have one more question here in the chat room before we, you know, wrap up and make sure people know how to find you and contact you. Kat in the chat room is asking, you know, you were talking about it was DDT, correct? The pesticide?
Yes.
And so that's not an issue anymore, but she asked, is lead shot still an issue from ammunition or the sinkers used in fishing?
Absolutely, it is. For bald eagles particularly, it is lead shot because they tend to eat gut piles in the fall when it's deer hunting season. And it's legal for hunters to leave their gut piles in the wild after they clean out their deer. But that those gut piles have lead fragments from the lead bullets in them. And during the fall hunting deer season, the Raptor Center gets inundated with dead and dying bald eagles because they have eaten these gut piles. They're so attuned to hunting season that eagles will actually, in some places of Minnesota, will actually fly toward gunshots and wait in the trees for the hunter to leave the gut piles.
So
and that's
smart.
A testament to how many, you know, to how many hunters, you know, who participate in that tradition. And that's a great tradition, but there are alternatives. There's copper bullets now, and bullets made out of all kinds of other things, tungsten and bismuth. And you can find it, and it might be slightly more expensive, but it's so worth it because it doesn't fragment and it's not poisonous. It only takes parts per million to kill a bald eagle.
Oh, yeah.
So just tiny little fragments is enough to kill a bald eagle. Oh. And sinkers are a problem for birds, for water birds. So loons and trumpeter swans need to pick up gravel from the bottom of the lake and to use that in their gizzard to help grind up their food. And when they do that, if there's lead sinkers in the water, they will ingest those and they can die from it as well. So please, please look for alternatives when you're using tackle or using bullets in the wild. It's very much worth it, and it's relatively easy to find. It's getting easier and easier to find those alternatives, and it protects all of our wildlife. And I wouldn't want to feed my family any sort of meat that had lead fragments in it either.
Well, right, exactly. Right? We wouldn't do it. We wouldn't want them to do it, and they don't know that they're doing it. So we can help them out. Yeah.
Yep.
Very good information for anybody who's out there. Yeah, exactly. And one quick question before we get to how they can find you and support you. Kat was also wondering if eagles migrate. Do they? And, you know, or where do they go in the wintertime?
So some of our eagles do migrate. Some of them don't. If they have an open food source, open water throughout the year, they will stay around if they can. And these eagles at this particular nest have historically stayed and not migrated. And so we will watch them from November throughout the whole winter. And, you know, they'll be there on the nest. And But many do migrate. And so there's a big migration that goes through the Hawk Ridge and spend, you know, their winters elsewhere. So they're coming from Canada and they fly through Minnesota and fly south. And we have put telemetry devices. That's another thing that the donations pay for, is some of this research, putting telemetry devices on eagles. And so we do know that some of them migrate, but not all of them do.
Wow. Fascinating. Well, this has been so interesting, but I want to make sure people know how they can connect with you or support more funding for this work that you're doing with the eagles. So how can people find you and donate?
So our website, you can donate online at mndnr.gov/non-game/donate. And we also have a Facebook page, the Non-Game Wildlife Program at Minnesota DNR. If you just do a search, you will find our page. It's got a gorgeous eagle face on there. And you know that that's us. And you can find out more about what we do. There are also links. There's a donate button there. There are links to our webpage that tells you all about all of these projects that we've talked about tonight. And that is a good place to ask us questions, because you can send direct messages and we check that constantly and we answer questions on there. So feel free to send a message to us on our Facebook page, and join. If you go to our webpage where you're watching the Eagle Cam, you can also join up to get a newsletter. We do biweekly newsletters regarding the happenings in the nest. And we update everyone about what's been going on and what their stage of development is and all that eagle biology information. And you can also read the historical information about this nest and about these birds. So, you know, when eggs were laid and when we lost the young one, and when they, you know, all of the information you need to know or want to know about these birds.
Awesome. Well, I'm signing up right now for the newsletter, and then I'll make a donation too, because I think this is really amazing. And
thank you.
The work that you guys are doing is very inspirational, and it's what makes this state so amazing, is to have these resources and these animals and everything available just in our own backyard. So it's really amazing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We are very fortunate here in Minnesota. We have an abundance of wildlife, and it's, you know, we can, that's one of the few things we can do now. We're in lockdown, but you can still get outside and go out into nature and you can see these things. There's just an abundance of birds and wildlife out there that you can go out and watch. And it's we're very fortunate here.
Yes, absolutely. So is there anything else that your group or the wildlife program is working on other than eagles that you want to talk about? We have a couple of minutes left.
Well, we do have lots of projects going on throughout the state. We do things with wood turtles. Wood turtles and Blanding's turtles are both listed species, and so we have been putting telemetry devices on them, and that's pretty fascinating. They put these tiny little boxes on the back of their shell that they don't even notice, and they carry them around without even knowing that it's there, and then we can track them with telemetry and know where they're nesting and if whatever is causing them to become a threatened species might be because of habitat loss. We can try to protect that habitat. We work with mud puppies, which are sort of like water salamanders. We work with goshawks. We have research going on with timber rattlesnakes, which are found only in Houston, Minnesota. But there's a population down there that we're trying to protect because, you know, when people find rattlesnakes, they kill them. And so they're becoming more and more endangered. And so all of these projects and a lot of our success stories also are on the webpages. So you can see we've got video there and we've got lots of great photos and then explanations about where some of the other funding comes from. We do get a certain amount of funding from grants when we apply for them for specific projects. And so you can read all about all of that on our webpages too.
Wow. That's a lot that you guys have going on.
We do, and that's just a small portion. And we have a very small staff, and so we so appreciate the donations to our program, because we couldn't do it without donations.
No kidding. And do you guys have volunteers then too, or how do you do it with such a small staff?
Well, we do have volunteers, and then we rely on citizen science for several of our projects. And so one of them is the frog and toad surveys that we have in the spring. We're not encouraging them this year, unfortunately. But then we also do loon surveys, and volunteer loon surveys, and people sign up to count and watch loons on their own lakes. And so we also help with habitat restoration and awareness about the use of lead sinkers in loons, because it's very detrimental. And then we also did some research putting telemetry devices on loons, one of my favorite projects, because I was able to be there and help with putting telemetry in and on the loons so that we could see where they migrate to. And we know that they were in the Gulf of Mexico when the Gulf oil spill happened in 2011.
Oh.
So it's all really, you know, it came up in their DNA. We were finding the thumbprint for those dispersants that were used, and the oil itself was in the eggs and the feathers and the blood of the loons when they came back to Minnesota. So because of that, we were granted some money from the oil spill reclamation money. And well, we haven't gotten it yet, but we will
get
some of that money in.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so that will be used to help restore some habitat for loons, as well as, you know, build nesting platforms that people can put out. And yeah, go to our website and look for those things too, because we love citizen science, and we're hiring a new citizen science coordinator to help with a lot of these efforts, because we need more help with, you know, counting things and monitoring populations of species in Minnesota.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a, you know, kind of a fun project that you can help the DNR by, you know, counting something you're probably watching anyway. So I think that's fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's what people do. People go out and they love hearing frogs during the spring. And so they go out and learn how to identify the different calls and do counts, and then report those back on an app. We have an app that people use, and we still need volunteers in a lot of areas. But and actually, now that I think about it, I think some areas it's probably still encouraged to go out, and you can do it on your own without having to. We can still be socially distanced and count, do the spring frog and toad counts. So
fantastic. This is super interesting. This was so much fun to have you on our show. Thank you so much, Lori, for joining us tonight. Yeah, this was great.
You're very welcome.
We posted some links to donate and for the webcam and your Facebook page. So hopefully, you know, people have an easy way to find you guys. Otherwise, you know, definitely, you know, just Google them. And I Googled it this morning, and it was the first thing that came up. So it was easy to find.
Right.
And it just is fascinating. Really interesting.
It is. I really enjoyed tonight's conversation. It was a lot of fun. Thank you for having me.
Yes, we will definitely have you back, because I know Stephanie was very, very disappointed that she couldn't be here tonight. But this was so interesting. We'll definitely have to have you back and bring around some more awareness for the eagles and all the other animals that you guys are helping, and how to donate and keep that going so that we can see more of it.
That would be great.
Yes.
That would be great. I look forward to it.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you, everybody who's listening tonight and in the chat room. Thank you to ParaX for hosting the Gathering Radio Show, and Sarge, our most amazing producer. Thank you, as always. And we look forward to talking with you, not next week, but in 2 weeks when we're both back and ready to go and have so many things to talk about. But everybody, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time. Take care.